Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont. And Yuri, it was quite a strange weekend because it started with quite big news and then it seemed to stay quite a strange weekend. We had Jorge Martin on pole and then winning the race. We had a crazy crash with Pedrosa and Salvadori. It's been and lots of rumours and news, and it's been not a gentle return to action after the summer break.
Yeah, well, I would describe it as an interesting way to come back to the reality after the longest summer break I ever remember. So yeah, it was a bit of a wake up call for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because it was a really nice summer break. 5 weeks have been great to not have any MotoGP.
Yeah.
And then 10 o'clock on Thursday morning, we get a message saying, oh, there's a Rossi press conference, and boom, that was the start of it all.
Well, we all could have been predict what was going to happen, but in that case, in this specific case, none of us were really sure, because there was two possibilities, and both of them looked at that point reasonable. So, because we had inputs in both sides, so I think in this regard the team did a really good job by keeping the news until Rossi's press conference. And yeah, in the end, as we have written, a month ago or 2 months ago, all the inputs were pointing at the retirement, but yeah, we finally got the confirmation.
And that feeling of uncertainty spread to the race, because there was a sort of suspicion that we might not even get a race on Sunday because of the weather forecast was crazy. There was a lot of talk about postponing the race, and then we had a red flag, and that made everyone a bit more nervous. But we got through it, and it was a great race. I mean, Jorge Martin, we have to start there because we can't forget Sunday was just his sixth MotoGP start. He missed four races with injury. We know this is a good track for the Ducati, sorry. But he was, I don't know if perfect's the right word, but he was very, very close to it this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was he was very constant. He was there, and in qualifying, he made boom. He made that statement, the one that he also made in Qatar. But don't forget that in Qatar, when he finished on the podium, he was very consistent, very solid during the whole race, and he was there making no mistakes. But, I mean, last Sunday, he made even less mistakes. He barely did any mistake. So, yeah, he's been working like crazy over the summer break. He's like a beast at the moment on his physical side. And we're going to have some interesting Sundays from him.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they don't call him the Martinator for nothing, but I mean, like you said, the point I wanted to pick up there was the consistency. He already showed that at Qatar, but what he did show in Qatar was the inexperience. You know, he didn't know how to kind of manage the tyres properly. He even admitted that on Sunday, that maybe he wasn't strong enough to win that race, but you know, he came under intense, in both starts he was quick. You know, not a lot of riders was quick in both starts to that race, for a number of reasons, but Martini had intense pressure from Joan Mir for the whole race, and he was the one that forced Mir to push into a bit of a mistake late on. Mir ran wide. Martin was almost flawless. It was this wasn't a performance of a guy who's just done six MotoGP races. This was the performance of a guy that's been on the grid for years and years.
Yes, but at the same time, I mean, we all know his talent, but at the same time, I think he is in the right moment to try these kind of things, because he has no pressure, because it's his season to enjoy. You know, being a rookie is, I mean, try to learn as much as you can, but at the same time, try to enjoy, try to take those risks. Probably in the future, he won't be able to take that risk because he will have a lot of things to lose. But at the moment, it's all to win for him.
Yeah, it's the perfect storm. He's got great bike. He's got a great team around him. We can't stress this enough that the Pramac team is really, really strong. You know, it's probably the best satellite team on the grid.
100%. In this moment, considering the struggles that Petronas is going through, and I would say that 100% is the let's say the most consistent, the most solid, again, consistency is the most solid satellite team in the MotoGP grid at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, we can't talk about Martin's win without talking about Pramac, because, of course, all teams work hard, but it seems like Pramac is one of the hardest working teams, and they've come so close in the past to that victory, and it just came short.
I think that it comes because of a reason. It comes for a reason, because since Gigi Dallinia joined the Ducati, he has changed the approach of the factory. Now, speaking with let's say the staff of the Ducati, not only him but also Paolo Ciabatti, Davide Tardozzi, they consider Pramac as a second factory team.
Yeah,
they consider Pramac a factory team with a different sponsor, but most of the resources that Ducati has at the moment are both separated into the. I mean, they go to factory, to let's say Philip Morris team and Pramac team, so there's no huge difference. Actually, I was last Sunday in the afternoon on the paddock, and some guys from Ducati, from the staff, were not happy about, of course they can't be happy with the factory guys' performance, but at the same time, they are glorious about what Martin did.
Yeah, Martin's win is interesting for a couple of reasons. The first one is because Austria has, of course, been a Ducati stronghold since 2016. It's only lost one race at the Red Bull Ring. For the past years, it's been Dovizioso been doing all the winning. This year, Ducati changed its approach. It's a young lineup in general. And the fact that Martin was the one to carry that that win record forward was significant for me in terms of vindicating Ducati's approach to bank on youth.
Yeah, but not only on youth, but on talent.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's not only let's. Maybe I'm gonna put myself in trouble now. But I mean, it's not only trying to make the gamble and let's go for a young rider.
Yeah, yeah.
We all that in a way it's what Petronas is looking for at the moment. But I mean, there has to be a strategy behind, and that's what Ducati has, not from now but from many years. You know, I mean, they've been fighting trying to convince Zarco to stay in MotoGP with them. They made the gamble with Pecco. Now they sign Martin, creating, you know, a diplomatic problem with KTM.
That was the point I was going to raise next, because
They have pretty clear idea about what they want and what direction they have to point at.
Yeah, well, because it could have been easy for Ducati to have gone for a more experienced rider on the grid currently, just as a, you know, almost like they had done with Dovizioso for a few years. You know, he obviously Dovizioso, mega talented, but safe pair of hands. But, you know, Martin is very obviously talented and he's young. It's sort of the perfect combination to go. It's not. It's almost not really a risk at that point. You've got this mega fast guy and he's mega young, so why not give him a factory bike?
And don't forget that he can put a lot of pressure on the factory guys. Pecco is a very, very, very talented guy, but we are still waiting for him to win. Miller, last Sunday, showed again.
Yeah.
His.
The big problem with Miller is consistency. And you have to say Miller's championship is almost gone. I mean, 72 points is a big gap. And, you know, at the Red Bull Ring, that's not the kind of thing you need to be doing. You cannot be getting involved in fights with Yamahas at the Red Bull Ring.
The main question mark that I have with Jack, who is, in my opinion, a lovely guy, is that I see Jack this year as we saw Marc Márquez in 2015. Either he was on top winning or on the podium quite often, or he was crashing. And Marc was clever enough to learn from that and to say to himself, listen, I'm not going to win a title going this way. I need to change something. I need to be more consistent. I need to, you know. In that case, maybe it was because of the bike. But I don't think Ducati has this kind of problem at the moment. So I think it would be good if Jack can work on himself, because we have listened so many times from him. Whoa, this is my fault. I take this one. So, okay, but you need to make a, you know, stay forward. You have to learn from your mistakes. Otherwise, you keep, you stay at the same point. I don't know if you...
Yeah, no, 100%. The second point about Martin I wanted to raise, and you touched on there, is that Martin's first victory as a rookie, as a rider that Ducati went for straight away, was that it came on KTM's home soil. Now, of course, Martin was a KTM rider for a couple of years, and KTM didn't find a place for him in MotoGP. I think they wanted to keep him in Moto2. He didn't. And on a weekend where there's been a lot of controversy surrounding Raul Fernandez's promotion to MotoGP, it sort of highlighted where KTM's biggest problems are with its riders.
How would I say that without ending in court?
Yeah, we need to be diplomatic about this.
I think that as Jack Miller needs probably to learn about his mistakes, I don't think KTM is learning about the things that have occurred to the factory over the last years. I mean, you have the example of Paul Espargaró, you have the example of Jorge Martin, you have the example now of Raul Fernando that will stay in Tech 3 MotoGP team next year, but against his desire. So I don't think it's the best way to manage the riders for its own good. So
yeah, 100%, because
I mean, with even with Oliveira, you never know. I mean, he's a bit of he will stay next year, but I think he is doing all in his hands to try to be free for 2023, which means that is a completely different speech than the one that you have from Honda or Ducati or Yamaha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's not get things wrong. KTM has done a great job in developing talent. That can't be denied, and they've got an embarrassment of riches on their hands. They've got so many great riders, but I think we've both written this at several stages that, okay, you've got these riders, but the way you handle them is bound to crack at some point. And I think we're seeing that more now, that the Fernandez situation is probably going to rumble on a bit longer than what it is currently. I mean, he said to Dathon, I think, at the weekend, he was asked, is Tech 3 KTM where you wanted to go? And he said, no, let's leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that he is not happy. He is very depressed at the moment because he doesn't want to go into MotoGP with Tech 3 KTM. It's because he really believes that his bike is the Yamaha for his riding style, and don't forget that he turned down a huge offer from Aprilia,
and Aprilia wouldn't be a bad bet. It's not a bad bet now, it's a good bike.
No, but he thought that his bike and the possibility was there, but the problem is that KTM doesn't want to lose him.
Yeah.
Which is understandable,
yeah.
But here, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's fully understandable. KTM has invested on him, but what I mean is that maybe there are different ways to manage this kind of situation.
Yeah, it's almost like KTM has obsession, and that's...
Well, I would say that it's not the best having a rider when he doesn't want to stay in your in this team. That's the, I would put it this way. It's not the best for any of the parts.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I spoke to Pit Beirer in Germany, and he said to me, he said, look, if we have riders that don't want to stay with us for whatever reason, then fine, we'll let them go.
That's not true.
Exactly. Not true. You know, they say one thing.
We all know how Red Bull works in Formula One with the Red Bull Junior team and this kind of things. We've had a lot of examples over the years.
Yeah.
So you have to apply that in KTM. They do the same. So and once you sign with them, sorry, Luis, you sign with them, they own you.
Yeah.
And they do with you whatever they want.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, that they say one thing, but they obviously, that's complete rubbish. That's the clean version. But it would almost be better if they just came out and said, look, we have these guys and we want to keep them and we will do anything. That would almost be a better tactic than saying, if they don't like to be here, then we'll let them go, because it just makes them look a little bit like a prison team almost. It's like you can come, it's like Hotel California, you can check in but you can never leave.
Well, in the end they have the power. I mean, KTM has the power, and of course there are a lot of clauses in this contract, so they have the power to do whatever they want. I mean, it was a bit surprising when Raúl Fernández admit that the other day.
Yeah,
but it shows how frustrated this guy is.
Yeah, and that's going to be 2 years of... I mean, I think Raul's quite an intelligent guy, that he will, next year, he will just get on with the job, but you don't
I think he will have to make a switch at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise MotoGP is very dangerous.
Yeah, and 2 years of being openly miserable just won't... I'm sure he will once he gets on the bike, and I think once he starts racing, and I think he will enjoy that part, and he's obviously so talented, I think he will be strong next year. That'll keep him focused. But if the worry is, if results aren't great, then he will just double down on the fact that Tech 3 isn't the team for him, and that KTM has made a mistake. And there's a risk that they're... It's too early to say, but I kind of get the feeling that there might be a risk of a Zarco repeat, or even a Vinales situation.
But at the moment for him, I think he would sign a Zarco situation, repeating a Zarco situation, because he would be free. And don't forget that Petronas was very, 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 very interested in him. The problem is that there's not only this escape clause, there are many things. I mean, they don't want to fight with... I mean, Yamaha doesn't want to fight with KTM because of the, you know, strategical agreements and business. And so, yeah, it's not that easy.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be an interesting thing to watch going forward. But coming back to the present... A couple of really important results in Styria, because we had Joan Mir in second, very close to the victory. His best weekend all year, he qualified fifth. Suzuki has the ride height device, and it now seems like finally the titled events can start.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like this, because Joan was very impressive since, I would say, well, over the weekend, because it's a track he really likes. I think this track owns him a victory from last year when they stopped the race. But I mean, from FP3, when he first tried the rear device, he was very fast, and he looked, at least from outside, very comfortable with it. So I think it can make a change. It can be a game changer for the title.
Mm-hmm. Well, I asked him in the press conference, could he have fought for victory yesterday on Sunday without that device, and he said no. So that shows just how... I think a lot of it is probably a mental boost, although there will be definite lap time things. I think
don't forget the Suzuki's mentality. I mean, they are probably not the fastest factory on changing and on making on doing the bike's evolution. But once they do a step,
it's a good step.
Yeah, I mean, 8 times out of 10, it works.
Yeah, they haven't really had a bad development since 2017 when they went wrong with the engine. And that wasn't really Suzuki's fault either.
No, you know, exactly. What was the one which is not in Suzuki anymore?
Yeah, exactly. He who shall not be named. But yeah, important for Mir, and he looks like he's got a spring in his step again. He was very kind of down in this first half of the season. You know, he's like, oh, I can only do a third. You know, the bike's not good enough. Now he's like, ah, we got the device. I feel strong. Let's go for it. There's good tracks coming up for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's not a lot of margin for him to react. And in my opinion, if he wants to count for the title fight, we need to see a mistake from Fabio, because if Fabio is doing great, I mean his consistency, even in a not the best track for Yamaha, being able to finish on the podium is amazing.
That was a real champion's ride from Fabio on Sunday, because we know how difficult the Red Bull Ring is for them. And to be fair to Fabio, he's always maintained that, look, the bike is not bad at the circuit. It's just last year the bike was really bad, and obviously they didn't have full powered engines. But to come away with third, you know, fighting Ducatis, you know, he kept Jack Miller behind him for a long, long time. That was exactly what he needed to do. And he's extended his championship lead, which is, you know, that's the perfect scenario.
Yes, 100%. So, yeah, I think at the moment, considering the ups and downs from the Ducatis, let's see if Mir has time and opportunities enough to reduce the gap.
Yeah, you have to think now that we haven't seen the consistency from Ducati that we've needed. We know Fabio's consistent. We know Juan is consistent. It's if Juan can get a few more big results in the next few races, it's going to become a two-horse race between those two guys, I think.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Just to finish on the Ducatis, Pecco was quite unlucky, I think, because he was really, really strong at the first start. But he was a number of riders that seemed to have, when they switched tyres, they'd found a dodgy tyre. You know, he had a problem. Marquez had a problem.
Oliveira
had to retire because his front tyre chunked. Cal Crutchlow had the same problem.
But they cannot say that. I mean, they cannot say that because it's forbidden.
Yeah.
They have a call from God or I don't know who. And so they don't want to say it. So if they don't want to say it, okay, I'm not going to say it. Because in the end, we look like stupid make these statements when they don't want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, Bagnaia said he had a problem with the rear of the bike and he just wouldn't say it was a tire problem.
Okay,
but
so if they don't want to see, Bagnaia made a very bad race.
Well, yeah, which is not, result-wise, yes, but technically speaking, isn't true, because he was strong all weekend and then strong at the first start.
Why they can say that the Yamaha is not good or isn't good, but they cannot say that the Michelins are not, you know, good enough.
Yeah.
Or why? So,
you know, okay. I think if you come into a championship like this, if you're not willing to take bad press, then you shouldn't be here. That's not me giving advice
even,
to Mitchell.
Even in Formula One, I think in the last race, there were a few drivers complaining about the difference of performance of two theoretically identical set of tires.
Pirelli has been absolutely slaughtered over the past 10 years in Formula One by the drivers, and they've met that response, they've met that criticism, and they've improved. I don't know why Michelin, it's almost like, you know, Michelin is like a religious entity. You just can't say anything bad about them or else you'll be smited.
So if they
down.
Don't, I'm not going to do it because we look stupid.
Yeah, there'll be no more free lunches at Michelin when we can do that again. Brad Binder, Katie, let's talk about the crash first of all, actually, Danny Pedrosa and Lorenzo Salvadori, because thankfully both riders were okay. And I have to say to Danny Pedrosa, you know, he's not raced a bike for 3 years. He has a big crash and then he decides to get back on the bike and go and finish top 10.
Well, I ask him after the race, and I ask him, listen, Danny, I mean, when you were there on the floor looking all the bites coming against you, did you think, who the hell convinced me to come back racing? And he laughed and he told me, well, I was not thinking on that, but I was thinking, I'm convinced that at home, my family would be thinking that.
Yeah. Well, Cal Crutchlow said something similar. He said after he knew everyone was okay, he had a bit of a chuckle in the garage because he thought that because the bike was wrecked, that KTM were going to have to ask Danny to come back next week to do a wild card, which she might not want to do. But yeah, first of all, it was great to have Danny back. It was almost like he was never away. He was just quick on the bike the whole time. It was fantastic. But that crash was... raised a lot. I don't want to go too much into the debate because, you know, you can go to social media for that and voice your opinion.
Well, I mean, it's the same than last year or 2 years ago. I mean, Spielberg is not the safest track on the calendar. Yeah, we all know that. I mean, yeah. It would be redundant to start the loop. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. The thing I wanted to say was is that accident could have happened
anywhere.
And it has happened anywhere because... And I don't want anyone to take this the wrong way, and I'm not trying to cause issues, but it wasn't a hugely dissimilar accident to what happened at Mugello in the Moto 3, and even blinder corner. You know, we saw it in Barcelona in Moto 3. We saw it a few years ago at Le Mans in Moto 3 when Jakob Kornfeld jumped over a bike. You know, these things can happen. No one said, we need to ban Mugello or we need to ban... But I remember people talking about the safety at Mugello, and a lot of people were on Twitter saying, no, you can't say this about the circuit, you know. So, yes, we know Red Bull Ring's dangerous, but I don't really get why this incident is all of a sudden different to those other ones.
Well, this is not the most dangerous kind of an accident at the Red Bull Ring.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
when we all talk that the Red Bull Ring is not safe, we're not talking because of this kind of crashes.
Yeah, it's the Zarco Morbidelli crashes.
Exactly.
The Bastianini accident from last year could also happen anywhere, but I think that was maybe more of a Red Bull Ring problem.
Yes, but maybe it can happen anywhere.
Yeah, and
I mean, unfortunately we've had that in Misano with Tomizawa.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, in the middle of the street.
Yeah, I mean, Simoncelli as well in Malaysia was...
Exactly. And we cannot say that Sepang is not a safe track.
It's the kind of accident that we can do literally nothing about, you know.
It's the worst scenario ever for a motorcycle racer.
Yeah,
I mean, lying down in the middle of the way, I mean, you are exposed, so you have to be lucky enough to escape from the guys coming.
For sure. So I think that's all we need to say. What I will say about that incident is that it gave us a really good picture. There was a picture of Danny Pedrosa taken where he's stood looking away while there's flames burning in the background. And it reminded me, I don't know if you've seen the meme on social media of the little girl standing in front of a burning house and kind of smiling evil-like to the camera.
Yeah.
They're very much the same picture.
Yeah, I think KTM will use that.
Yeah, well, I actually said to in the Autosport chat we should use that, but we thought we might leave it a bit because, you know, Savadori's just injured himself, but that gave us a chuckle. But Savadori's broken his ankle, but he's okay otherwise. He'll be back at Silverstone, and that's the main thing. Just back on to KTM briefly. Brad Binder, the man needs to sort out his qualifying because that was a great ride.
Yes. I mean, he always did the same. He's a Sunday rider.
Mm.
So, yeah, he needs to, as you said, I mean, he needs to find his way on qualifying.
Yeah, pull his finger out a bit. Not that he's not going fast enough, of course. I just wanted your opinion on another thing. There was some controversy between Marc Marquez and Aleix Espargaró. Aleix was furious at Marc. Well, he was more angry at the stewards, but Marc hit him twice off at turn one, and Aleix was raging. He thinks it should have been a penalty. Marc said, well... it's racing. I don't think Aleix has a case personally. It was a hard move, but I don't know. I'm 50-50 on that one. I don't think it should have been a penalty as such, but I'm not sure.
I agree 100% with Aleix.
Really?
I'm not talking that Mark deserves a penalty. I'm just saying that the stewards
need of the problem, yeah.
to do their job. So if they have considered that it's a racing incident, okay. But maybe they have.
Yeah, the problem is they don't communicate that the same way that the stewards do in Formula One on television.
I don't agree with Aleix in the way that he says that, because I mean, I agree with Aleix with that the stewards panel is not probably at its best moment over the last 2 years. But at the same time, I don't agree with him, because by saying that, he cannot say, I don't blame Mark because it's his way of riding.
Yeah.
I blame the stewards panel. Well, in a way, you are suggesting
yeah.
that a penalty should be applied. So in a way, you are blaming Mark.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a bit of...
He did say one thing I did 100% agree with, though, is that had he crashed, or had Alex Rins crashed, who was alongside him, then that probably would have been a penalty. And you can't...
Yes.
You have to punish...
Yes.
You can't punish...
Yeah, you cannot take the reference of crashing or not crashing.
Yeah, so yeah. With that, 100%. I do agree with him. But I think the biggest problem with Turn 1 at Red Bull Ring is the corner. It's too tight for Turn 1. It's too tight, and there's far too much runoff area. So
yes.
You get people that will just come straight in and just go out.
Yeah, you can play a PlayStation corner.
You can
do a PlayStation corner.
And we saw in that first start, I counted 6 or 7 riders that did that. They just went off. Don't care about the corner. I'm just going to go run off. I'll take the one.
Mark was really lucky at some point.
Yeah.
By not taking Nakagami.
Yeah. And on the second start, Mark really wasn't at fault for that contact with Aleix, because Fabio came up the inside of him, which I think it was an aggressive move, but yeah, it was a turn one thing. But I do agree with Aleix that you can't punish the outcome of an incident. You have to be so... I think we've pissed off the stewards enough, so we'll move on. Just finally to Maverick Viñales, because I don't know. I can't fathom Maverick, because, you know, he finishes last in Germany and he's nowhere, and then he goes to Assen and he's great, and then he goes to Red Bull Ring and he's great. And then the first start to the race, he was great. You know, the best start he's had in ages. You know, I've not seen Maverick make a start like that. And then we get to the restart, and he's absolutely nowhere. He stalls the bike, and then he just has no form. He says, like, electronic problems. And it's really hard to... It's just hard to understand Maverick's way, because he's so strong in this race, and then all of a sudden he struggles...
Well, I think, again, I would put it this way. I don't know what Maverick is thinking that he's going to find next year on Aprilia.
No.
I mean, he's not going to find any difference between... I mean, who really believes, apart from his father, that he posted that on Facebook?
Yeah.
That somebody has... Stouched the bike or sabotaged the bike because he's leaving the team. The second bike. I mean, predicting that the bike, that the race was going to stop, and then, come on. I mean, we are in a professional environment, and so I think, again, I mean, when everything happens to the same guy, in a way, there's something that you can work on.
Yeah, I mean, stalling a bike does happen, and I think Maverick was a bit unlucky. He had a lot of electronic problems, but yeah, the whole sort of thing about there being a conspiracy is just a bit too... Yeah, it's a bit too Reddit for my liking. It's a bit too internet forum-like. But anyway, I'm sure Maverick showed that he could be strong at the Red Bull Ring, so I expect him to be better this weekend, so we'll wait and see. Other than that, we're expecting him to be announced at Aprilia this week, hopefully. There's some conversations about Bezzecchi to SRT, but we know VR46 is hoping to keep him. That'll all be resolved soon, hopefully.
Yeah, I think Petronas, I mean, the SRT team was very convinced on having him for next year, but in the last days, VR46 has made an effort, has had meetings with Bezzecchi, and there was also a meeting between VR46 and SRT trying to, let's say, unlock the situation in a friendly way, which is what is not happening with Raul.
And I think on that note, before KTM comes to kill us, we'll end it there. Thank you very much, Yuri, always. And thank you to the listeners. You can go and listen to all of our other podcasts and all of Autosport's different genre podcasts on all your podcast platforms, and read all the stuff from the Styrian Grand Prix on Autosport and motorsport.com. But we'll be back next week to discuss what will hopefully be a safe and exciting Austrian Grand Prix. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye, and keep looking after yourselves.